Good evening. You are listening to, and this is the Perpetual Notion Machine. My name is Kelly Schwartz, and I'm subbing tonight for Heather and Nan on the Wisconsin Energy broadcast. The Oxford English Dictionary defines a lame duck as a defeated member in the short session of Congress after a November election, or a ship that is damaged, especially one left without means of propulsion. The expression seems to originate from 18th century London when it referred to someone who could not pay his loans. It could have also referred to a stockbroker who couldn't pay his losses and had to waddle out of the alley like a lame duck. I was surprised to learn that reporters credit President Abraham Lincoln for coining the political usage of the term. It is said that he first used the phrase lame duck in reference to outgoing President Calvin Coolidge, of whom he said, "A senator or representative out of business is a sort of lame duck. He has to be provided for." As lovable as fragile fowl may sound, lame duck sessions have become a particularly nasty occurrence in the age of partisan politics. The United States Congress has been trying to think of ways to eliminate lame duck sessions, culminating in the 20th Amendment in 1933. The swearing-in of both presidents and new legislatures was moved to January. At the time, the amendment's drafters assumed that no rational elected official would give up their Thanksgiving or Christmas vacations to come back to Washington. However, this did not turn out to be the case. Joining us tonight to analyze some of the consequences of Wisconsin's state Congress's recent lame duck legislation is Todd Ames, director of Healing Our Waters, Great Lakes Coalition. Hello, Todd. Thank you so much for joining us tonight.
I'm glad to be here.
I've heard you are a wonderful person to interview and talk to about science, and I'm really excited to learn a little bit more about this bill that was recently passed. But first, can you tell us a little bit about your background with Healing Waters and your background in science policy?
Sure. Well, first I'll just start with my current day job. Mm-hmm. And I should also note that all of the opinions I'll be expressing on the show tonight are not opinions of the Healing Our Waters Coalition. Is a coalition of about 155 non-governmental organizations that work all across the Great Lakes region. Mm-hmm. We work at the federal level almost exclusively. We basically advocate for programs and policies at the federal level that benefit the Great Lakes. So that's what we do, and we spend a lot of time talking to members of Congress and working on pieces of federal legislation. But I am based here in Wisconsin and spent a lot of time in Wisconsin state government. Specifically, I spent 8 years as the Water Division Administrator for the Wisconsin DNR back when Jim Doyle was the governor, 2003 to 2010. But I've been involved in public policy work for almost 40 years and water policy advocacy work specifically for the last 25 years plus.
Excellent. And so personally, I'm always curious to know how people came to find their interests in science. And so I'm curious to know a little bit about what was it that attracted you to kind of science policy in the first place?
Yeah, well, I actually came about it a bit of a circuitous route. I was a political science major by training and figured that I would do something in the public administration realm. And then when my career started, it was right about 1980. There were a lot of environmental problems and a lot of issues that were to be dealt with. And the more I got involved in various public policy issues, it became clear that that intersection between public policy and the need for good science to address these rather significant environmental issues that were directly impacting human health, our quality of life. So you put all that together and it became clear that the place where I really found my passion and interest was in this realm of advocating for public policy issues in the environmental sector.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it seems like you get the opportunity to talk to a lot of people, and you know that communicating is an important part of what you do.
So, yeah, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. It's I think the science is critical. The science is a critical part of any good public policy, particularly in the environmental realm. But if you can't then effectively advocate for mm-hmm. that science, you're going to be very frustrated with a lot of good ideas on paper that don't actually make it into public policy.
Exactly. So we're going to talk about the special session overview a little bit. Can you give us your perspective on this week's special session? Generally, what took place?
It was quite astonishing, actually. I have been at this kind of work for nearly four decades now. I've really never seen anything quite like this. You know, I appreciated your overview at the beginning of how we got the name lame duck session, but I don't really think that that term does what happened this week justice. I prefer to refer to this, and in the future, I think we'll look at this as the We Oppose Democracy sessions, when there really was a wholesale assault on what the voters were opting for on November 6th. And more significantly, perhaps even than that, this assault on the idea that the way we engage in representative democracy in this country, and particularly in this state, certainly is supposed to involve a clear separation of powers. Legislators are supposed to legislate, the executive branch is supposed to administrate, and the lawyers are supposed to litigate. Mm-hmm. And this legislature seems to think that they're supposed to do all those things. And while they're doing that, by the way, they want to make sure that they make it as difficult as possible for people to vote. So, specifically, as it relates to state government, there then were a lot of things that they did to really hamper the ability of state government to do its job.
Mm-hmm. So when legislature and government pass a bill into law, agencies will write the rules that enable the legislation. Those rules will shape how the legislation is enacted in practice. Like you said, the legislators will legislate. Can you tell us a little bit about the current rulemaking processes of, specifically, we're interested in the DNR, but in general, what are the steps to issuing a rule on how long does it normally take?
Yeah, well, it already has slowed down in its process because of actions that have been taken over the last several years in this legislature. But again, the general approach and the reason that there are rulemakings and that this sort of activity is done at the state agency level is that, legislators will pass pieces of legislation to give guidance on what they believe should happen on a particular issue. Mm-hmm. But no legislature or legislator knows everything there is to know about every complex issue that impacts state government, nor should they be expected to. And that's why we actually hire experts, civil service experts, that then go into those agencies that then have the ability to actually carry out and administer those laws when they come over to the executive branch. And so that rulemaking is a natural outgrowth of that. A piece of legislation comes over to, say, the DNR in this case. It impacts a complex part of safe drinking water enforcement. Just making up an example here. All of the details of how to do that are not going to be contained in a piece of legislation. They're just not. So you need to write rules to figure out how you're actually going to go about doing that. There has been a process for many years in this state, very similar in other states and at the federal level, that once that there's a process, there's a whole public notice process, the transparency that's required, comments, et cetera. Once that rule is then done, it goes over to a legislative entity that reviews those rules called the Joint Committee on Agency Rule Review. And then once it goes through that review process, then that rule goes into effect. And so that's the normal process. Historically, it used to take, for a complex rule, it would take around a year. It now takes more than 2 years. Mm-hmm. With the new piece of legislation that's passed, I think it's a guarantee it'll take much longer than that to do any rulemaking. And unfortunately, because of several things in the legislation, there's no guarantee that those rules, once they're put into place, will stay in place.
Mm. So a provision in the special session prohibits a court from giving deference to state agencies' interpretation of the law, or giving deference to the expertise of state agency staff in legal proceedings involving actions of the agency enforcing that law. Practically, how could this impact state agencies when the rules are challenged in court?
Well, I think this is a pretty significant part of the legislation that just passed, and it's very unfortunate. Because what it basically is saying, certainly as it relates, again, if you take an agency like the DNR, is that not only are they saying that we don't trust the scientists to make the right decisions, we're actually going to prohibit judges from trusting the scientists to make the right decision. Because what they're basically saying is if there's a question before the court, it's come up through a piece of litigation, mm-hmm. that the judge is not supposed to give deference to those scientists that are weighing in on that piece of legislation, or mm-hmm. litigation, rather. That's problematic, because if you're not going to rely on the folks that actually know the science that feeds into the particular issue that is the subject of the litigation, who then do you turn to?
And furthermore, what are we as scientists doing? You know, what is the value of the work that we do if not to help bring about positive change in the world?
Right. Yeah. And you know, it gives, again, historically, I would say, it gives deference to those scientists and in that agency. It's not, if they're off base, it's not like it's a slam dunk. It's just what it's saying is that, look, we hire people to go into these state agencies to do these jobs that are civil servants that actually have expertise in this area, and that if they are weighing in on what is the impact on a particular issue that is involved in litigation, we ought to give some deference to them.
Mm-hmm.
This legislation says you actually are not allowed to do that as a judge now in those sorts of court cases.
That's incredible. So were you able to attend or spend any time at the Capitol during the course of these proceedings? Or do you know anybody that was? Did you get a feel for kind of what the vibe was there among both the policymakers and the people that were there, either in support of or against the bills as they were going forward?
Yeah, I mean, I did a little bit. I did not. I mean, it was pretty. I stopped in on Monday night at the kind of the vigil protest at the end of the day, and then stopped in again on Tuesday when the legislation was first being contemplated. But, you know, it was very obvious this was going to be a going into all hours of the night mm-hmm. effort. So I did not stay for the whole thing. I was quite honestly heartened to see the number of people that did turn out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the estimates are that there were over 1,000 people that registered
wow.
in opposition
wow.
to the legislation, and several hundred that stayed to testify. And this is, keep in mind, again, on a bill, a series of bills, very lengthy, that were posted at the end of the day on Friday, mm-hmm. and then were subject to their first hearing at, 12:30 on Monday.
Mm-hmm.
And actually passed at, 5:30 in the morning on Wednesday. So there was nothing even vaguely approaching an actual due process for legislation as important as this.
And just to be clear, this period, this was the public input period of the process of lawmaking, right? Like, this is a hard and fast part, at least historically, how this has been done.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. And I can certainly, I mean, there's absolutely no question. If you look back, even 10 years ago, certainly 20 years ago, there's absolutely no way this would have happened.
Mm-hmm.
This is the idea back in the good old days where you actually deliberated on pieces of legislation and tried to find a bipartisan solution to issues.
Mm-hmm.
The idea that you would have really any piece of legislation, but certainly a set of bills that were very complicated, that you would introduce them on one day, hold a hearing the next day, and then have a vote the following day, nobody would have even suggested it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it doesn't allow for adequate public input. Legislators, the Democrats were talking about this, legislators were voting on bills that they did not know what was in there. They did not know what the fiscal impact was.
My goodness. Wow.
So it's quite astonishing what occurred.
So to that end, if I might direct it a little bit back, since this is a science show, we should talk a little bit about science, I imagine. So can you tell us a little bit about some of the specific provisions that might be of interest to scientists or people interested in science as it, as it influences Congress? You've talked a little bit about how they're no longer going to be acceptable, witnesses or to testify in legislation process. But is there anything else that people might want to be aware of for how these, how this bill is changing the power structure and, kind of how the DNR is shouldering different responsibilities now because of it?
Yeah, well, another piece that I think is, that first example is really dealing with litigation and the role of...
I don't have the vocabulary for it, I'm sorry.
That's all right. The role of it is complicated, which is precisely why you shouldn't be passing complicated pieces of legislation in 48 hours.
They're making me look bad,
So you've got this one piece that deals with litigation, and then you've got another issue. There's a lot of, particularly in the DNR, there's a lot of federal laws and regulations that are enforced by the state agencies. Particularly on the water side, we have a lot of very technical science-based laws associated with things like the Clean Water Act, the Safe Drinking Water Act. It's very common for updates to happen in one of those pieces of legislation where there is a need for new regulations. So EPA will issue new regulations for how to deal with a new contaminant that is getting into drinking water supplies.
Uh-huh.
They will then come to those delegated state agencies, in this, our case, the Wisconsin DNR, and say, you need to update your regulations to be able to effectively enforce the Safe Drinking Water Act in the state of Wisconsin. So you need to get new rules in place to deal with, and again, the example I'm using, this contaminant.
Mm-hmm.
What this legislation says is that directive from the federal government to do that activity to take care of that problematic issue with the Safe Drinking Water Act will not be good enough.
Mm-hmm.
The only way you're going to be able to do those rules now is that you're going to have to pass a separate, specific piece of legislation through the Wisconsin legislature before you can
comply.
Put those rules in place.
With it.
You'll be going to, I can easily foresee this situation where you'll be going to the Wisconsin legislature, spending a lot of time, energy, money, staff time, to get the legislature to pass this piece of legislation that the federal government has already done a lot of work on, mm-hmm. Vetted and come to the conclusion that we need this set of rules in place. And now the agency that knows how to do this is going to be told, no, you don't get to do that. You don't get to actually carry out your duties to enforce this piece of federal legislation unless and until you go through this process of passing a separate piece of legislation in the state legislature. It's, you know, there's so many things about this bill. I call it, you know, it's you know, kind of good timing when they pass this, because I look at this is a state agency red tape gift that was wrapped in a, you know, Christmas tree piece of legislation. So
just in time for the holidays.
Just in time for the holidays, you bet.
So I'll bring up another example of maybe some federal legislation that some of our listeners might be aware of, the Great Lakes Compact. You know, people probably heard about this. The Great Lakes Compact is a formal agreement between the Great Lakes states, which details how the states will work together to manage and protect the Great Lakes. So the Great Lakes Compact was in the news not too long ago when the city of Waukesha asked for access to water from Lake Michigan. That water diversion for Waukesha was granted. The city was the first to have its application to draw 8.2 million gallons from Lake Michigan approved under the Great Lakes Compact in 2016. And then earlier this year, Wisconsin signed off on a water diversion that would allow Racine to withdraw 7 million gallons of water per day from Lake Michigan that would serve the Foxconn plant they're building. Maybe. The environmental groups have filed a legal challenge over the state's decision. Can you speak on how these legislative challenges might impact the Great Lakes Compact?
Yeah, I actually, as many damaging parts of this legislative package as there are, at least from what I can tell, now this is early in the process, mm-hmm. we're still trying to analyze everything that was approved as of yesterday morning. But from what I can tell, the one of the few good pieces of the final package was that they actually were able to pare back the original proposed requirement, which was that the that was going to really hamstring the state attorney general in terms of their ability to bring lawsuits on their own. So if that provision had stayed in the bill, you arguably could have had a real problem in terms of being able to actually, have an independent attorney general that could, you know, represent the state in these cases. But at least as I look at the language, I don't think that that's going to be problematic with the compact. That coupled with the fact that the other safeguard you've got with the compact is the compact mm-hmm. is actually a contractual agreement between the eight states. Mm-hmm. So this state legislature can't very well on their own change the compact. They would be in violation of this compact that was agreed to by the eight states, approved by Congress, and signed mm-hmm. by the president. So I think there's a lot of issues certainly associated with the Foxconn question, but at least I don't see this package of bills having a direct impact on that.
That's certainly good to hear. You know, yeah, like good news. Right. So like we've discussed, the authority of the attorney general could be curtailed if these bills are signed into law. But you said that was one of the provisions that was ultimately.
Yeah, I mean, there are other provisions that absolutely are still going to make it more difficult for the attorney general to be, an independent lawyer for the state. That particular sure. provision was pared back.
Sure, but, sure. So the bills that would prevent the attorney general from settling the approval of the legislature mm-hmm. and also allows the legislature to hire private counsel to defend against lawsuits that challenge the legislature, how might this interference in the state's Department of Justice relate to the work of the DNR?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's certainly you could envision a scenario where it would get complicated if, you have the Attorney General representing the DNR and taking one position, and mm-hmm. then the legislative layers have hired some private counsel that is in the same piece of legislation taking a different position. That is why I actually think that that particular, well, there's several provisions, but I actually think that one is likely to get challenged as a clear violation of the separation of powers requirement sure. in the state constitution. So I think that's one of the many pieces, parts of this legislation that will get litigated because precisely about that. I will say the other thing I think is very troubling about, you know, the assumption that they had, particularly as it deals with the Attorney General, and in my career, I spent two different stints in state government where I worked in Attorney General's offices. So I'm very familiar with how Attorney Generals work. And the assumption in passing those bills was that the Attorney General was not going to do their job.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's what they're effectively saying, is that the right. incoming Attorney General is not going to do their job, which is quite an insult. Because sure. as Josh Call has appropriately said, and as any lawyer worth their salt that gets elected to an AG's office mm-hmm. knows, your job as the Attorney General is to represent those state agencies.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you fundamentally do. You are their lawyer.
Yeah.
And if you are doing that well, you are going to represent them to the best of your ability. If that state agency has a colorable argument for what they did,
mm-hmm.
And I think that's another thing that is troubling about this legislation, is it was effectively saying we don't believe that the incoming Attorney General is going to actually behave as an Attorney General.
What a shame.
Quite insulting to Attorney General elect Call.
Someone so qualified, elected to, you know, to public
yes.
office. But I want to give you a couple minutes. We like good news.
Uh-huh.
So how is Tony Evers responding, or Evers, I'm sorry, I'm still
yeah.
learning.
Yeah.
How is Tony Evers still responding to these changes? And furthermore, is it possible for science to be nonpartisan? And is there a nonpartisan way forward to sort of resolve the concerns of both sides of the legislature?
Yeah, I mean, I think the good news in the face of all this, the good news is that we've got, I really believe there is a man about to become governor of Wisconsin that is going to reestablish the idea that we hire good public servants to come in and serve the people of the state and serve them well. And I think in the DNR, I expect that there's great opportunity for the DNR to be taken back by the civil servants there that are great civil servants and told, we want science to inform mm-hmm. what we are doing for natural resources. We want you to go out and do your job. And there's a lot that can be done there.
Mm-hmm.
The waters of Wisconsin are not held in trust for Robin Voss and Scott Fitzgerald. The waters of Wisconsin are held in trust but for all of us, and they cannot be legislated away. So whatever happened this week, that didn't happen. The US EPA has delegated the responsibility for enforcing the Federal Clean Water Act and Safe Drinking Water to the DNR. Our state legislature cannot legislate that away. If Tony Evers can come in and get good people at the head of the DNR that just tells those really talented staff in the DNR, we have your back, go out there and enforce the law and protect the vital natural resources of our state, we'll be in good shape.
Todd, thank you so much for joining us tonight. I'm glad for some good news. You know, it's been a stressful week for all of us, I think, but yeah, we'll move on and we'll get things right.
Yep, absolutely.
Thanks
for having me.
Thank you for joining us.